Iran says the United States and NATO are to blame for the recent terrorist attack in Iran. Gunmen kill at least 17 people at a party in northern Mexico. And after 9 years of war in Afghanistan, the U.S. says it's too early to gauge its progress there.
Hello everyone, it's 2:30 a.m. here in Tehran and you're watching the news here on Press TV.
Thanks for joining us. Iran's president has blamed NATO and the United States for the recent terrorist attack that left dozens dead in the southeast of the country. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad says the NATO and U.S. forces based in Afghanistan and Pakistan support the terrorists both militarily and financially. The president has tasked the foreign ministry with looking into the attack with the help of the neighboring Pakistan. Ahmadinejad says despite Iran's friendly ties with the Pakistani nation, Islamabad must be answerable for the attack. Two bomb blasts that hit outside a mosque in Zahid on Thursday night killed 27 people.
Parliament Speaker Ali Larijani did not hesitate to point out the role that the United States has played. In his address to the Parliament on Sunday, while he asked for Pakistan to be accountable for the presence of the terrorist group on its soil, he said that the U.S. was, quote, the main reason behind the July 15th attack, which U.S. officials were quick to condemn. But as with all cases where actions speak louder than words, those statements did not mean much.
Let's not be dismissive for a moment and accept Mrs. Clinton's statements as fact that the United States had nothing to do with the latest atrocities in Zahedan. Let's also accept her sympathy as sincere for the people of Zahedan, especially the families of the victims. But at the same time, we cannot overlook the fact that the very presence of American occupying troops in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and of course in the Persian Gulf is a catalyst for the ongoing violence, extremism, and terrorism. At the same time, we cannot overlook the fact that the decisions made by the Obama administration is a cause for further division among ethnic groups and minorities in the regions. By the way, the very same people that used to live along with each other in peace and harmony for thousands of years.
But on the same day of the attack, word that an appeals court in the U.S. had ruled that the State Department should review the terror status of the Mujahideen Khalq organization, MKO, unveiled at least part of the truth.
Politically, this has some significance and shows a paradox in the policy, foreign policy of the United States towards terrorism. If they condemn terrorism, they also must condemn terrorists. And of course, MKO has always claimed a lot of lives inside Iran. They have taken the responsibility of many sabotage activities inside Iran, and they have never outruled armed struggles. They have never officially said that they would put down their guns.
Turning a blind eye on MKO's terrorist activities, the U.S. designated its members as civilian protected persons.
A RAND study which has examined the consequences of this decision says that it has left the United States open to charges of hypocrisy in its war on terrorism. Gisumi Shahmadi, Press TV, Tehran.
Well, gunmen have killed at least 17 people at a party in northern Mexico. The incident happened at a recreation center in the city of Torreon in the state of Coahuila. The state's prosecutor says five SUVs drove up to the party after midnight and indiscriminately opened fire at the people. Authorities say they found more than 200 bullet casings fired from automatic weapons at the scene. The attack brings the number of shooting victims in Mexico to at least 50 over the weekend. Torreon is a key transit point along smuggling routes into the United States.
9 years into the Afghan war, U.S. Vice President Joe Biden says it's too early to measure progress in Afghanistan. He said the U.S. has yet to deploy all of the troops of the so-called surge in Afghanistan by August. He also said U.S.-led forces are trying to get what he called the reconcilable members of the Taliban into the Afghan political process. Biden described U.S. President Barack Obama's timeline to begin withdrawing from Afghanistan in July 2011 as the beginning of a transition in the war-torn nation.
The people of Kenya must make this choice.
Meantime, the U.S. says it expects Pakistan to do more to counter terrorism.
Well, the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, says any attack against the U.S. that is traced back to Pakistan will have a, quote, devastating impact on bilateral relations. Clinton is in Islamabad in an effort to boost relations and secure stronger Pakistani support for the war in Afghanistan. She's set to unveil a huge aid package aimed at fighting anti-American sentiment in Pakistan. The package is part of a $7.5 billion funding approved by the U.S. Congress last year. Clinton is due in Afghanistan on Tuesday to attend a major international donors conference.
Lebanese Prime Minister Saad al-Hariri is calling for closer ties with Syria. He has said that Beirut wants sincere relations with Damascus that would serve the interests of the two nations. He was speaking in Damascus, where he is held talks with Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. Hariri was officially welcomed by his Syrian counterpart Mohammad Naji Otri upon arrival in Damascus. This is Hariri's third visit to Syria as Lebanon's PM. Several economic agreements are due to be signed during his visit.
The European Union's top diplomat Catherine Ashton has visited Gaza to press for a complete lifting of Israeli blockade on the seaside territory. Press News' Ashraf Shannon reports.
EU foreign policy chief Catherine Ashton has said that the international community must exert pressure on Israel to go beyond easing its Gaza embargo and throw open the territory's long blockaded borders for people and goods.
You know that there are small signs of change in the policy to allow goods into Gaza, but we continue to call for the opening of the crossings to enable people and goods to move around.
Ashton is the most senior diplomat to visit Gaza since Israel announced earlier this month that it would ease its three-year blockade to allow most consumer goods into the besieged coastal territory.
She's visiting the ordinary people and the kids who are the future, and that is showing us that that's where her focus is, and she wants to see, and she said many times to many people today, she wants to see big change.
Israel continues to ban virtually all exports from the territory and restricts the import of construction supplies and raw materials for industry. It also keeps a tight naval blockade over the territory. Ashton visited one of the UNRWA schools that were targeted by Israeli rocket fire in January of 2009, and also the only pharmaceuticals company in Gaza, and met with local business leaders. Talking to local businessmen, the EU official said the battered Gaza economy can only recover if all raw materials are allowed in and finished products can be exported. Hamas movement welcomed Ashton's visit and urged the EU to help break the siege.
Hopefully her visit would force Israel to lift the blockade. We want the European Union to take practical measures to end the siege.
However, the Islamic Jihad movement in Palestine described Ashton's visit as another attempt by the EU to help improve Israel's image.
This visit only serves Israel's interests. Europe plays a major role in the suffering of our besieged people. Ashton's visit is malicious.
Israel has said it is not willing to completely open border crossings, citing security concerns. An international outcry over Israel's deadly raid of a blockade-busting flotilla in May prompted Israel to partially relax the border closure. However, experts say the changes are not far-reaching enough and will not help Gaza's battered economy to recover. Ashraf Shannon, Press TV, Gaza.
Let's have another look at the headlines. Iran says the U.S. and NATO are to blame for the recent terrorist attack in Iran. Gunmen kill at least 17 people at a party in northern Mexico. And after 9 years of war in Afghanistan, the U.S. says it's too early to gauge its progress there.
Still to come here on Press TV, we'll tell you more about the AIDS conference in Austria. Stay tuned. Welcome back. Iran and the neighboring South Caucasian nation of Armenia are set to expand relations. Armenian defense minister Seyran Ohanian has met Iranian foreign minister Manoush Mottaki in Tehran. Ohanian underscored Iran's strategic role in the Middle East. For his part, Mottaki called for expansion of ties between Tehran and Yerevan.
Security is tight after violent protests broke out in the city of Grenoble in southeastern France. Police say the demonstrators burned cars and attacked a tramway to protest the killing of a local man. Police had killed a 27-year-old man after he allegedly held up the city's casino. The violence began around midnight Friday and lasted through Saturday. Several people have been arrested following an exchange of fire with police during the protest.
Now, the 18th International AIDS Conference is underway in the Austrian capital, Vienna. Press TV's Eva Manasieva was there.
Experts from around the world gathered in the biggest conference center in the Austrian capital, Vienna, to discuss further steps in the fight against AIDS. The week-long event, which started under the motto Right Here, Right Now, has put the access of HIV patients to therapy and medical care on top of its agenda.
This type of conference is critically important by bringing together the community affected by AIDS. It's the scientists, the clinicians, those affected by HIV, as well as those who make policy.
So far, however, the strategy to combat the AIDS epidemic has not been as successful as expected by the United Nations AIDS program, which started 10 years ago. The goal to have a fully effective anti-AIDS vaccine has still not been realized. So apart from the official talk and calls, the experts who gathered here will try to push the individual governments to invest more resources into HIV prevention and treatment programs.
I think the important point is, right now, we do not yet have a vaccine that has been proven to be effective. There have been recent basic science breakthroughs in the lab that give us a great deal of hope.
The AIDS conference takes place every 2 years at different places around the world and attracts not only high-ranking officials and medical experts, but also representatives of the NGOs and civil societies of the developing countries, where the epidemic is on the rise and treatment is hard to access due to poverty and poor government policies. Manufacturers of medical equipment are also present.
Big achievement in the last year has been shown in the rich countries. People living with HIV/AIDS have almost the same life expectancy as the not infected people if the treatment is organized at the highest level. And this is the potential to show what's possible today. And in Africa and in the other poor countries, we have not achieved this result, but there's a hope that there will be improvement.
Altogether, the most affected regions by the HIV so far are Africa, Central Asia, and in the last couple of years, also the Middle East. An estimated 5.2 million people were receiving life-saving HIV treatment at the end of 2009, according to the latest update from the World Health Organization. WHO estimates that 1.2 million people started treatment in 2009, bringing the total number of people receiving treatment to 5.2 million, compared to 4 million at the end of 2008.
The World Health Organization's treatment guidelines expand the number of people recommended for HIV treatment from an estimated 10 million to 15 million, and the cost for this treatment in 2010 will be about $9 billion, according to the UNAIDS program. But a lot of patients, especially from the developing world, have no access to this treatment, and many of those people are now here at this conference to seek possibilities for better access to HIV therapy and medications. Eva Manasieva, Press TV, Vienna.
British oil giant BP says it's temporarily stopped the oil that has been pouring into the Gulf of Mexico for the past 3 months. The company says a new cap it put over the leaking well on Thursday will be monitored carefully in the coming hours. BP says it hopes the cap will stay in place until the well is sealed up for good in August. The disaster, which began April 20, has been described as the worst in U.S. history. Some estimates have put the spill size at above 4 million barrels, making it the biggest accidental oil disaster of all time. The slick has caused economic and environmental damage in at least 5 states along the Gulf Coast, as well as bringing political fallout for the U.S. government.
U.S. authorities say the number of immigrant deaths has increased in the U.S. state of Arizona. Here's more.
U.S. officials say they found the bodies of at least 40 illegal immigrants in Arizona since the beginning of July. The victims died while crossing the Arizona desert from Mexico. Experts believe the July death could set a new monthly record. From January 1st to July 15th this year, more than 130 bodies of immigrants have been recovered in Arizona. This is a sharp increase from the same period last year, when 93 bodies were recovered. Authorities blame the death on the above-average heat in Arizona, as well as tighter border security. Meanwhile, reports say neo-Nazi militia groups are emerging in the region. They patrol the desert of Arizona without authority of law. They believe that only non-Jewish white people should be American citizens, and that everyone who's not white should leave the country, peacefully or by force. Local law enforcement officials are worried that the heavily armed groups could worsen Arizona's security-related challenges. There has already been controversy over a new immigration law in Arizona, which requires immigrants to carry documents verifying their status. The law has sparked protests across the U.S. Now it remains to be seen whether the emergence of neo-Nazi militias could inflame racial tensions.